Thanks very much, Brian. Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon, 5 on 5, 5 on Ray at RTE.ie. Sad news today, the death of Paddy Maloney, the lead man in the Chieftains. He died at the age of 83, survived by his children, Angus, Padraig and Aidan, and his wife, Rita, and our thoughts are with them. We'll be remembering Paddy with people who knew him in a moment, but of course, you know, in years to come, he'll be remembered by his music. So let's have a bit of the Chieftains. Tour Dum de Love. And the Chieftains got together in 1962, so next year would have been their 60th anniversary. Paddy Maloney won't be around to see that. John Sheehan, good afternoon. Very sad day, John.
It is indeed, Ray, absolutely.
And Paddy Maloney has been in your life for over 70 years.
That's right. We went to school together in the Christian Brothers School in Merino, and that's where we started off on the tin whistles together. And I have an old photograph of the band that formed out of that. I have it in the office here. A little reminder every day of where we all came from.
Yeah. And Brother Jim McCaffrey was the man who introduced the tin whistle to you. But Paddy had been playing it since the age of six.
That's right, yeah. He was getting lessons from Leo Rousham, the great piper, who lived in Donnycarney as well. That's Barney McKinnon, by the way. Barney McKinnon and Paddy, they knew each other as teenagers, and
right,
they went in for festival competitions and that kind of thing. I remember being at one of them, and there was a category called miscellaneous duets, and who comes out on the stage? Only Paddy and Barney. Pipes and banjo, totally unheard of as any kind of a duet, and they walked away with first prize, of course.
Did they? And Barney, is it true that Barney was in the Chieftains before he was in the Dubliners?
I think Paddy used to, I could never see any credence for that, but I heard Paddy putting that story around a few times.
He was good at telling the story, Paddy Maloney.
Oh, jeez, he was, and he was a great man for mentioning all the people he'd done collaborations with.
In fairness to him, John, he did. When you mentioned, like, you know, the Rolling Stones, Ziggy Marley, Pavarotti, Sting.
That's right.
But the list goes on and on and on, doesn't it? It's the people he didn't do duets with. They're the people, that'd be a short list.
Yeah, there was a joke going around one time, why did the chicken cross the road to do a duet with Paddy Maloney?
Talk to me about him as a man, you know, and as a friend.
Yeah, well, we were schoolboys together, and he was just one of the lads in the class, but he had a great gift of music and a great ear for picking up tunes. And this brother we mentioned there, Brother McCaffrey, he brought in a tin whistle one day and played the tune for the class. And we were all mesmerised. We hadn't seen a tin whistle, let alone heard one played. And then he said, would anybody like to learn? And of course, everybody in the class, any bit of diversion, you know.
Yeah.
Sir, everybody wanted to learn. So he said, well, I'll have to ask the superior because it's not on the curriculum. So he came back the next day and he said, well, the superior said it's okay for any boys who are willing to stay back after class. So there weren't quite as many volunteers then. But Paddy was one, and Liam Rousham, the son of Leo Rousham, the great piper, he was also a member of the band. And Kieran O'Reilly, another great fiddle player.
Yeah.
A great nucleus of interest.
When both of you were on for your birthday on the telly, you talked about this
on your show.
Yes, you talked about this thing that you learnt, a way of remembering notes. I'll play this clip and you can tell us about it after. Is it tonics or something? Anyway, here's
it's called the tonic solfa. Everybody's kind of aware of it generally.
Here's a clip from that. So that was 2018, the summer of 2018. John Sheehan and Paddy Maloney on the telly. Here we go.
You know, we have this system, by the way, that Christian Brother taught us, tonic solfa, the do re mi, you know.
Right.
And John was an expert at it, and I was, that was my system, and still is, in fact, to this day.
What's it called?
Tonic Solfa.
Tonic Solfa.
Solfa, yeah.
Right. You know the way it did us get do, re, mi, fa, sol, it. Do, re, do, do, re, mi, fa, sol, do, re, mi, fa, sol, do, re, 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 mi, fa, sol, do, re, do, re, do, do, re, do, re, mi, fa, do, re, mi, fa, sol, do, re, do, re, do, re, mi, fa, sol, do, re, do, re, do, re, do, re, mi, fa, sol, do, re, do, re, do, re, mi, fa, sol, do, re, do, do, re, do, re, mi, fa, sol, do, re, do, do, re, do, do,
That was a great duet, John Sheehan.
Yeah, he always took a great delight in demonstrating that, how we learned music, the old Tonic Solfa, yeah.
Stay with me there, because laughing in the background that night was Sharon Shannon, and Sharon's on the line there.
Lovely.
How are you doing, Sharon?
Hello, Ray, and hello, John. Great to hear you there, and lovely to hear those lovely stories, John, about you and Paddy when you were young.
You big time for Paddy Maloney, Sharon.
Oh, I absolutely loved him, Ray. He was just such a dote. I was mad about him, and he was always in good form, and he was so full of energy and crack. And of course, he was an absolutely fantastic musician.
Yeah.
And I think Paddy and the Chieftains are responsible for luring people in to listen to Irish music from all over the world. Like you'd meet people playing the pipes from places like Japan and China, and that's mainly because of Paddy.
Yeah. Like they played on the Great Wall of China, and I suppose it's no surprise that they were big in America because there's an Irish diaspora out there, but the fact they were so big in China was something else, wasn't it, John?
Yeah, amazing. There was no boundaries where Paddy was concerned. He had a kind of a mission, as Sharon was saying there, to spread the gospel of Irish music globally, and he certainly did that.
And he was always up for a session, Sharon.
Absolutely, yeah. He was, him and Rita, they were great fun, really great fun to meet and have, a few tunes, and just always on for having a few tunes and a bit of crack.
And when you think about it, Sharon, like, as I was saying, the Chieftains would be celebrating their 60th anniversary next year. So they had a good bit done when you came on the scene.
Yeah, absolutely, loads. Yeah, I was, totally. The first time I heard the Chieftains, I was blown away. I absolutely loved the music, and I was fascinated by the pipes.
Yeah.
And I used to be really looking forward to hearing. We went to see them in Innes and everything, and it was just really, really brilliant. And I think it's amazing how many people that they've brought in to hear Irish music that would never have heard it otherwise. And people are always saying it, that especially from abroad, that, the Chieftains are the first Irish music that they ever heard.
They were introduced to. Yeah, big time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thanks for taking the call, Sharon. Mind yourself.
Thank you.
Yeah, lovely to talk to you. Lovely to talk to you.
You too, Ray. Yeah. And you too, John.
Yeah,
you too. God bless you.
And John,
to all Paddy's family and to the rest of the band as well.
And we have a couple of the Chieftains on there. Kevin Conniff, how are you doing, Kevin?
I'm not too bad, thanks, Ray.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call.
It's a sad day.
It is a sad day, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So you were singing with the Chieftains for how many years?
Well, I joined in 76. They were doing Bonaparte's Retreat album in London. I was working away in a printer's in the dark room, and I got this call from Paddy, wanting to know if I could get a couple of days off to do a couple of tracks.
Right.
This is the one with Dolores Cain singing beautifully on the Bonaparte's Retreat album. So I went over and I was pretty much used on any tracks Boron was required on. And I remember in a Finch's pub on Portobello Road, Paddy asking me at a lunch break over a glass of Guinness if I'd consider making it permanent. And I couldn't believe my ears, I didn't know what was going on, but he seemed to be happy with what I was doing. And then singing was introduced by me a little bit later.
So it was the Bowron first and then the singing? Because Paddy played the Bowron himself, didn't he?
Oh, he did. Paddy could play anything. No, seriously, like he could play. I saw him with a guitar, handling it pretty handily. And sure, he used to have a skiffle group. the Four Squares.
Right.
When he was a youngster in Donier. And
Donny Carney, yeah.
And like he would have been playing the pipes and whistle and all at that stage, but he played, I think, banjo or ukulele and you know, donned a false beard and a funny hat for the skiffle group, which was all the rage at the time.
And he knew the importance of playing with the big bands. Somebody's reminding us here that he played on a Paul McCartney track, Rain Clouds.
He did. I think he was actually recording with Paul McCartney the day when the word came in that John Lennon had been shot. They were actually in studio when they got word.
That's what Tony Holmes says here on text. Yeah, exactly that. Yeah. Then he played with Chet Atkins, Ricky Skaggs, Mark Knopfler.
Oh, yeah, well, I was around for that, and that was some experience. But
What was it about him? Because he could draw all these people to him.
Neck. And talent, of course.
Yes, talent, of course.
He was highly, highly respected as a musician, he didn't balk at approaching the big names from. You know, and indeed, when we did, The Long Black Veil with the Stones and Sting and Roy Cooder and all, some of us were wondering, like, afterwards, what in the name of God are we doing? You know, what's this album all about?
Yeah.
And then, of course, we went on tour afterwards and in the US and different places. And the audiences had increased.
Of course they had,
But of course we didn't have the Stones or Sting with us. So the audiences who came probably, having listened to this Long Black Veil album and the collaborations we had done, suddenly were coming to our concerts. And what we played was 99% Irish music, and we got standing ovations from people who never heard Irish music in their lives before. So he was very glick in that respect. He knew exactly what he was doing, you know.
Yeah, John, he was a good friend to you, and whenever you met, you took up where you left off, and that's the sign of a friendship.
Yeah, it's one of those friendships. You know, you mightn't meet somebody for 3 or 4 years, and you just continue on whatever conversation was going on the last time.
Yeah.
And just one of those very natural, beautiful friendships we had.
Yeah.
And anytime we met, of course, Paddy was always anxious to show off the old tonic sulfur that we learned in school. And say, come on, kick you with the bar, let's do the corn wipe. And we go, some me those.
That's a lovely memory. Brian Masterson is on. Brian, you worked as a sound engineer at the Chieftains for how many years?
Since the beginning of Winmar Lane, since about 78, 79.
Right. Okay. Sad day to hear of
death
of Paddy. Yeah.
So sad, and lovely to hear John and Kevin and Sharon talking about these things. I mean, on the tonic sulfur thing, I went to China with them. And I mean, there was no preparation. There was obviously there was no internet. There was no mobile phones. There was no way of contacting anybody in China. And we met up with these group of musicians in the hotel lobby. And Tonic Sulfur came to the rescue because that's how they put the arrangements together.
There you go. And I thought it was just a little party piece on the TV show that night, me not being a musician. So there, it's open doors in China and other places.
It was the common language in China. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. And was, you say there was no preparation when you were going to China, that's a different thing, but was doing a gig with the Chieftains, was it fluid?
Oh Lord, it was it was a pantomime, you know. Kevin will know what I'm talking about. I mean, everybody would assemble in the studio, and nobody really had done much preparation. And then Paddy would talk them through it, and it was just so funny. We'll do an AA this, and then a B, and then into that. Now, Kevin, you join in there with the bar on. Now, hold on, Derek, you come in there now. And
very well,
on and on. And eventually out would come the most wonderful set of tunes or whatever.
Yeah. Sean Keane is on the line there. How are you, Sean? So you've played fiddle with the Chieftains, of course.
I did for years.
Yes. So the fiddle player, you could busk it as well as the rest of them.
Well, I got away with it.
Yeah.
I joined them in 68. I had been playing with Paddy before that in Kiltery Coolin,
And that was that predate the Chieftains, did it, Sean?
No, it was roughly the same time. Aha. Yeah, yeah.
So he was in two bands.
But they were doing a gig in at kind of a fringe thing in the Edinburgh Festival for a week in 1968, and he asked me to join them for that, and the beginning of a beautiful relationship with the Chieftains.
Of all the, because he there's a clip here, we spoke to him last year and he was just talking to us about travelling all over the world, and I asked him, was there ever a dud night? And this is what he said to me. This is Paddy talking to us, as I say, last November. Ed in Cork wants to know, will you ever ask Paddy if he ever had a bad night playing?
A bad night playing? Not within the band, you know.
Yeah.
We've never lost one of them. But maybe there was one or two, you know, I remember a place in Belgium or someplace like that, that it was a bit of a disaster, you know. But it didn't stop us from performing, you know. Because if there's three people there, that's all that counts. I mean, we played to, when the Pope came, we played to 1.2 million.
Wow.
And we played on the Great Wall of China, 350,000
wow.
people. You know, and the concerts recently have been fantastic. The group, I have wonderful young people playing with us, you know, Aileth McCormack and Trina Marshall, and there's a whole bunch of them, and they're wonderful. We had one of the best tours. It was heartbreaking that we had to stop in Pittsburgh. That was the last one before we came home.
What was the standout gig for you, Sean?
For me, well, I suppose the obvious one is the Albert Hall in 75. But the whole thing really stands out to me. It's been so important in my life.
Yeah.
And Paddy, he was an amazing operator. I was just thinking today about the various managements we had over the years. And it started off with Joe Lustig. We met him, he came to a concert of ours in Trinity College, and Paddy obviously knew something about Joe's background, that he was a good operator, and he introduced us to the Albert Hall the following March, yeah. And down the years then, don't forget, this was Paddy's baby, and he reared it, he nurtured it down the years, and he, for various stages of our development, he picked different managements that seemed to suit those stages, and until we ended up with Sam Feldman and Steve Macklem, and not forgetting their assistant Michelle Finley. But
was it tough hearing his voice again there?
I was only talking to him last Wednesday.
Right.
By accident, actually. I was meeting a friend of mine in Dublin, and he happened to be talking to Paddy on the phone, so he handed the phone over to me, and we had a good show. I thought he was in good form.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what knocked me out this morning when Angus rang me.
He has some legacy, hasn't he, Sean? And
he has. He created such a stir in. It wasn't just traditional music, but as Kevin was talking, mentioned earlier on, the various artists that he grabbed a hold of, you know, and he knew what he was doing.
Yeah, of course, he did. Yeah.
The same as he did with, he knew the managements he was picking, He oversaw all that, as well as the music and the arrangements.
So people forget that he composed music for film,
yeah,
Braveheart, and other things. David Brophy's in studio with us, lads. How are you, David?
Hi, Ray.
And
hi,
you,
David.
Through
hi,
your
Sean.
Your work,
well,
as a, you've worked with Paddy over the years, numerous occasions.
It's extraordinary. Actually, listened to Sean there say that it wasn't just traditional music; it was. There was no boundaries. In fact, that was, you know, think of the John Sheehan, there was no boundaries of Paddy. He just walked across every boundary, and he was one of the most open musicians. And like us musicians are, at times a delicate breed. And Paddy was the most open-hearted musician I ever met. And to see him, like, I remember doing a concert with him before. I think it might have been in Belfast. And at the end of the gig, do you ever go a curtain, Uncle Joe, Uncle Joe? And there'd be a refrain, the chorus, and over again. And then everyone on stage would take a solo. And Paddy would legitimately say to me, and honestly say to me, if anyone in the orchestra wants to take a solo, they can go ahead. Now, if we went through all 70 people in the orchestra, the show could have gone on for like 3 hours, you know? Yeah. And in the same like listen to Brian there, Masterson talking about pantomimes. I remember doing a gig with the Chieftains with an orchestra in Naples in Florida. And Paddy would just drop in like the day of the gig. Oh, by the way, we've got an astronaut playing with us this evening.
Yes.
And I wouldn't know.
Katie Coleman.
Well remembered. Katie Coleman. And so that would have been connections to Matt Malloy. And Katie's going to play with us. And I wouldn't know. And that was Paddy. But like anything could happen to Paddy. But it was always brilliant. And he always knew exactly what was going to happen. And he was like, I'd regard him as bulletproof. There was just no stopping Paddy Benoni. He was a force of nature. And we'll never see his like again.
Yeah. Brian Masterson, thanks. Is there anything else you want to say, Brian, before we let you go?
Oh Lord, I could. How long have you got?
Did you have a code between yourself and himself? He could see you behind your mixing desk, I suppose.
Yes. I mean, the eye contact was very important. Yeah. I'd always know when things were going wrong, when things were going right. Yeah. So there was that. No, I just think all I'd like to add is just that. If you didn't see the Chieftains when they were playing somewhere else other than their home country, if you were on the road with them, or if you saw them playing in the States or you know, in Europe, in Italy, in France, in Spain, in Galicia and stuff, I mean, they were just absolutely amazing, and they were the Paddy and the Chieftains. They were the ambassadors for Irish music.
Well, I tell you what, I don't know if you worked on this. We have a little. They used to play this as their opener at concerts. A bit of live music. Let's play this to remind people of their brilliance. Like all the brilliant music around the world, it has soul, doesn't it? It has real soul. That real soul. Kevin and Sean, we're going to say thanks so much and goodbye to you. And thanks for taking our call today. And sorry for your loss, because you've lost a colleague and a friend.
Yeah.
And John Sheen as well, you've lost a friend, a lifetime friend. Yeah.
Indeed, Ray, 70 years or more. Yeah.
And Brian, thanks so much for taking the call as well.
Oh, my pleasure.
Okay.
Mind
yourselves, lads. Thanks.
Thanks.
Bye. And David, we've one more person to talk to, but like, we can't underestimate Paddy Maloney's contribution to Irish music, can we?
No, we can't. And it's, as so many people have said, better than I'll ever say, he put Irish music on a global map in a way that couldn't have been otherwise. And he, like it was alluded to there by Kevin and to Sean as well, that he was an operator. He was a one-man operator, and he'd meet somebody after a gig or before a gig who was a musician, and immediately you'd see the cogs whirring behind his eyes. How can I work with this musician? I mean, I remember I've done concerts. There was one concert I did in Galicia, and we have to remember that he was great for young musicians. He gave young musicians a great start, and one was Carlos Nunez, the fantastic Galician piper. And I remember doing a concert in Santiago de Compostela, an outdoor concert, and they played one of the pieces they played was from the San Patricio album. And it'd start with Solo Tin Whistle, and I haven't got perfect pitch, but Paddy would start, and he started, and I'm saying, I wonder if he got the right whistle there, because I think it was in B flat, and he might have had a C whistle. And I turned to Matt Malloy and I said, maybe you play along. So Matt played in behind him, and you could see Paddy going, oh, I've picked the wrong thing up, the wrong whistle up, you know. And so, but like only Paddy Maloney could do the following. He played one handed while picking up the other whistle to bring the other whistle in, and it was seamless.
Isn't that great?
And that was like that, I was thinking of that earlier on today when I heard that Paddy had sadly died. Yeah. I was thinking of the things that Paddy Maloney did that I will never witness ever again in my life.
And he lived a full life, because we were talking to him last November and they had to cut their American tour short because of COVID. So,
there's no doubt about it. Even up until the last, he would have been planning what to do for the 60th anniversary next year. I have no doubt about that.
Francis Black is on. How are you doing, Francis?
How are you?
A man who's been ever present in your life, I'd say, just in the background, a soundtrack to it.
It's just such a sad day, and my deepest condolences to his family. And I would have met Paddy, obviously, down through the years, like everyone. And he was just a wonderful, gentle soul, and who was a brilliant musician, so talented, brilliant businessman, and was so clued in, you know, and on how to really kind of work in the business. It's a tough business, as we all know. Yeah. And he reached the heights, you know, he reached the top and with the Chieftains. And I'm just deeply saddened. I'm so sad today, because he was just such, and Ireland will miss him. The people of Ireland will miss him, you know.
Yeah, there'll be a big hole there, won't there? Left by Paddy Maloney. Thanks for taking the call, Francis. Thank you.
No problem at all.
Thank you. Thank you. Mind yourself. Yeah. David, thanks so much for
pleasure.
Dropping
in. Pleasure.
Yeah. So, and how many, like, you've worked numerous times over the years?
I was thinking, when was the first gig? Probably I was later in obviously in Paddy's career. I didn't know him earlier on, but like probably 15 or 16 years ago was the first concert I did with him, but was lucky to do quite a number of concerts with him since then. He loved an orchestra, and he'd meet me, we'd meet socially, not at a concert, and he'd say, "Will you bring the orchestra with you?" As if like I could just bring them. And I love the attitude. He just literally thought you could just come along and just bring the orchestra with you and be fantastic. He'd be sadly, sadly missed.
Paddy Maloney, may he rest in peace. Ar yeshte garev anam.
On RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Anishtar Shanam, the Reef Skelton, Nogtala, Barbani Kushla. Gormagut, Barbara, 51551RayRTE.ie. Now, with all the talk at the moment of making the 1st of February St. Bridget's Day the new bank holiday, a new book brings us through the history of the patron saint, husband and wife duo. Husband and wife duo. Former RTE newsreader Una O'Hagan and her husband, former RTE producer Colm Keane, are co-authors of The Book of St. Bridget. And they join me now in studio. Thanks so much for coming
in. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Making the trip up from Waterford. Una, so why St. Bridget? This is your third saint, is it?
It is. Yeah. And actually, you've hit the nail on the head. Saints are fascinating people. We did a biography of Thérèse of Lisieux, Bernadette of Lourdes, and now St. Bridget. And the thing I really like about Bridget is that she was a disobedient, single-minded young woman, a bit like Thérèse, who when she was 15 went to the Pope to make sure she became a nun. Bridget was very similar. She was a mix of characteristics. She was very kind. She was very concerned about the poor. She was very holy, but she was also single-minded, determined, and the one thing she wanted to do was become a nun, and she did become a nun at the age of 16. In fact, she even became more than a nun.
She went up to the ranks.
She did. She became a bishop. She went with seven companions to another bishop called Saint Mel, called Mel, who became Saint Mel. And she wanted him to profess her as a nun. Now, the interesting thing about Mel is that he recognized her because he had met her parents when her mother was pregnant with her, and he had predicted that the child would become great in the eyes of God.
Right.
So, according to all the great books of Ireland, the Behu Brigte, the Liberum Norum, the Book of Lismore, he read the episcopal order over her, which meant she became.
Isn't it mad that she was a bishop? And yesterday they were on Liveline giving out about women becoming deacons.
I know.
Never mind priests.
I know.
Well, it's like things have gone in reverse.
Well, it all changed around the 1100s or the 1200s. I mean, women had a big role to to play in the church up to then. If you go back to Mary Magdalene, her role, all the Marys around Jesus and so on. And there were bishops at the time who were women, right. And she was one of them. But in around 1200, the church became a male-dominated preserve. And from then on, it was kind of men only. And women...
I know, you when you're listening back to this, you won't like that sound. So I'm going to bring that up to your mouth.
Yeah, of course.
You've been a radio producer.
I know, yeah. I'm a bit off mic. Yeah. But women from then on, they literally kind of looked after the flowers, looked after the priests, made the dinners, you know, cleaned the church. And it was a terrible shame. But she also was up against it with St. Patrick. Patrick was a male, she was a female. There were three patron saints in Ireland, Patrick, Columbkill and Bridget. Patrick, by the way, very interestingly, was associated with Armagh, and Bridget, who worked in Kildare, came from Louth. She was associated with Dublin. And major battle, who was in control of the church in Ireland? And eventually, the Pope stepped in and said, Armagh. They had the primacy of all Ireland. And
so that's why we have St. Patrick's Day, not St. Bridget's Day,
exactly.
As in a national holiday.
Exactly. She lost out. And
which brings us nicely on to that. We mentioned in the opener there. What's your opinion on that? Charlie Flanagan was on Drive Time yesterday evening.
I heard him
arguing for St. Bridget's Day to become a national public holiday.
I can't think of anybody better than Bridget, really, in that role. I mean, she was such a wonderful woman. And she was real, by the way. This is now Bridget of Kildare. She was talented. She was ambitious. She was able, in her early 20s, to build this amazing monastic community, you know. I mean, it had males and females, everything.
And St. Bridget's Day, is it coincidental as the 1st of February, which was also a pagan feast day? Is it? And well, did she die or was born on the 1st of February, or is that...
She died. On the
Isn't that a
1st
coincidence?
Of February, yeah. And that is just a coincidence.
Right.
There's another coincidence in a way, and I keep hearing it, that she's a pagan goddess.
Yes.
And she is not the pagan goddess, an entirely separate persona, if you want to
put
it that way.
Was there a Bridget who was a pagan goddess?
Yeah.
Okay.
And well, now, was there? There was a belief in a pagan goddess.
Oh, yes, of course, yes. Called Bridget.
Called Bridget.
Right.
And you might ask, where did Bridget of Kildare get her name? She got the name, you know, through her father from Bridget the goddess. But she was real. And all the great books are very clear. She's chronicled by everybody as a real person.
And she set up a monastery in Kildare, and there was the eternal fire there, which is kept going by the monks and the nuns there, and that's all factually correct.
Could I come back to that just in a second? In terms of the public holiday, it's very important because we listened to some of the debate around the public holiday and Bridget, and a lot of people are saying, oh, it's the Catholic Church, she's a Catholic saint. She's not a Catholic saint.
A Christian saint.
She's a Christian saint.
Mm, yeah.
And it's very interesting because there are a lot of Anglicans who are devoted to Bridget.
Well, it's
and
religious though, but it is religious.
It is religious.
Yes, yes.
But,
I think
but
that's the argument against it. It's a religious thing. Yeah.
But she's more than that though. She's more universal than just religious.
You could argue that, you know, St. Bridget's Day was maybe borrowed, plagiarised from a pagan festival at the same time.
Yeah,
no.
And you could argue then that maybe a holiday at that time of the year is a good thing. Because
which you'd be wrong to argue. Which you could, and
was there,
people
was there
do.
Not a, was there not a pagan festival at the beginning of February?
Oh, God, there was.
Yes,
yeah, this
course,
was Lunasa
the,
or whatever.
In, yes, yeah.
But she did die on that day.
Right.
And, it's, you know, that's the way it is. There were only 365 days in the year, and she did.
Obviously, her life story is there. We've covered some of it. So Dundalk can lay claim to her, as in Louth. We can lay claim to her in Kildare as well. But then you go after the name as well, Bridget. And in the beginning of the last century, Bridget was the second most popular name.
It was, yeah.
Only, I mean, second only to what?
Mary.
Mary,
of
right.
Course.
Yeah, second only to Mary. And there were so many Bridgets in Ireland, you know. If you took any family, you'd have a granny called Bridget, a mother called Bridget, a daughter called Bridget, and you'd have chaos in a house. There had to be differentiation. I mean, they would call the daughter Breedog, and maybe the mother would be Bree, and the granny would be Bridget.
Yeah.
But if you walk down a town, any town in Ireland, back around 1900, and if you shouted Bridget, I mean, it would be like a rugby scrum, people coming at you.
What about Bridget Bardot?
Brigitte Bardot.
Bardot, not Bordeaux.
Yeah. That's, I know, that's the wine. Yeah. Yeah.
That was a Freudian slip. Yeah. You're thinking of what you're going to do. No, Brigitte Bardot is amazing. She was born in 1934 in France to very conservative French Catholic parents. And the most popular name in France at the time was, like Ireland, Marie. But she was christened, they christened her Brigitte. And the name, of course, came via Irish missionaries, also came via circuitous route via Sweden with an Irish kind of route to it. And by 1959, Brigitte or Bridget was the most popular name in France. Right. So, I mean, Bridget's influence goes everywhere.
Yeah. So you, I'm thinking you would vote for a public holiday on the 1st of February.
If I were a footballer, I'd have a shirt underneath my sweater here saying, vote Bridget.
Well, the thing really is about it, it's not just, I don't think, the timing of it is significant. That's one thing. It's the beginning of spring,
yes.
The end of winter. It's a be good time to kind of look forward, to take it, as Colin calls it, a little pause. But I don't think you're just celebrating St. Bridget. I mean, there were tens of thousands of Irish women who went to America to become domestic servants, who are collectively known as Bridgets because there are so many of them were called Bridgets. Yes. They worked hard, long hours, really made big sacrifices for their own families in America and for the Irish here, sending back remittances. They're part of the reason why the Irish, you know, acclimatized so well to American society. And we'd be celebrating all those tens of thousands of Irish women.
Right, we'll see what happens. I noticed in the top 10 up in Dubray Books in Stillorgan.
Yeah, your book is,
yeah, the book of St. Bridget, yeah. Colin Keane and Una O'Hagan. Because of the, you know, the death of Paddy Maloney, I would have loved to spend more time talking about Bridget because I have so much to tell you about her. But we've run out of time. So thanks, Una. Thanks, Colin.
Thanks.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
From Bridget to Deirdre. Deirdre O'Kane, good afternoon.
Ah, how are you, Ray?
How'd you get your name? Your parents gave it to you, I know that, but are you named after anybody in particular?
Deirdre of the Sorrows, I suppose, which isn't ideal for a comic.
Deirdre who?
Deirdre of the Sorrows. Sounds like you've never heard it before.
Yeah, I didn't.
Get out, Ray. Deirdre of the Sorrows.
She's a saint.
That's famous. That's sing play and, you know,
no,
part of our mythology.
Look,
do you think I've missed my shot at the sainthood? Do you?
Philistine, what?
Do you think I've missed my chance at the sainthood?
I think so. I didn't get a chance to ask Una and Colm how St. Bridget was actually made a saint. I must, you know, back in the day.
No, and how well did she have to behave? Like,
Yeah. I think you're not. No, neither am I. I don't think we're sainthood material. So, Sky
have given me a job, yeah.
There's a sort of a programme in the making of the show as opposed to just the show because it took so long.
I know. Look, we were meant to shoot this show 2 weeks before the pandemic started. When was that? A year and a half ago? A bit more?
Yeah.
So, obviously, we missed it by 2 weeks, which I was gutted by because we were prepared.
But you were supposed to do it just before lockdown, was it?
2 weeks before we closed down, yeah.
Oh, yeah, but things were happening, so.
Oh, no, sorry. I'm what am I saying to you?
Two weeks after.
My head's a marley, as my mother would say. 2 weeks after, so we missed it. Anyway, to explain to people who are listening, it's a stand-up show for Sky, where I, the host, and we have comedians on, and we will make you all laugh again if it kills us.
How many times was it postponed?
Five. Rescheduled five times.
Was there at any stage along those five times did you think this isn't going to happen?
No, on the last one, I really didn't think. When it was the fourth one was rescheduled, I thought, that's gone. And I was really heartbroken because I thought that was a real opportunity and it's gone. Like, I just did not think. The momentum was gone out of it. I thought they won't make it now.
But they did.
They did.
And it's on Sunday.
So fair play to Sky because they've stood by it.
Where
and are very keen to make it.
Where did
we
you film
filmed it in the Olympia.
Right.
With only 150 in the audience. We were even lucky to have that, to be honest with you. So, God, the quicker they let the people back into the theatres, the better.
But particularly for comics.
Yeah. Well, you see, that's the thing. I mean, musicians can still perform without a crowd. We can't. Mm. We just can't.
Because you sort of play a percentage game, don't you, as a comic? You know, that you're depending, you know, if 20% of 100 laugh, that's only 20 people. But if 20% of 1,000 people laugh, that's a lot more.
Well,
that's
now 200. We'd be able to get more than 20% of the people now, Ray.
I know.
You won't be doing well if you're getting a 20% response.
I know, but for your...
You're dying on your arse, as they'd say in my business.
So what's the tipping point?
Listen, you need to be
70%.
80, do I hear 90? Oh, okay. Yeah. You want the whole room with you. There'll always be one, but most of the room are with you. We couldn't really do the Zoom thing in the way that you can with music. We need an audience.
You need an audience, yeah.
Desperately. Yeah. So I hope people come
October
back to us
22nd.
In their droves. 17th of October we air the first show.
No, but October 22nd is the opening up thing. Is the opening up thing.
Yes.
Yeah, you're on October 17th, but it opens up on 22nd. And I think just from talking to people that there's a hunger, there's an appetite.
I think so. We're desperate for a bit of laughter.
To get out and be laughing with other people that aren't your members of your family.
But just that experience, though, we're meant to be together. We are meant to
bloody gather. We're social animals.
We want to hug each other again. It's so hard. Christ, we're all over it, aren't we?
So it's sort of like it's you. You're the MC. You tell a few jokes, then you introduce another comedian.
Do you know what this show is like? It's
slightly different because you have this house band.
Yeah.
Go on.
That's what makes the difference, I guess. I kind of describe the show as a Jules Holland show for comedy.
Right.
It's a little bit like that because a band of men who are the band, led by an Irish guy called Rob Broderick, who's phenomenal. He's a rapper, an improv rapper, and he basically interacts with the audience, with me, with the other acts, and writes songs in the moment, making them up depending on what's in your material or what the audience gives you. And he's sensational. And I guess because we have that house band, it makes it a much more fluid thing. So I'm interacting with him and the audience. We're all kind of one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the Jules Holland is for musicians.
Is this something that you've dreamed of? No, because it's the Deirdre O'Kane show. You're doing what you love doing, stand-up comedy. Is this a moment?
It is a moment.
Yeah.
It is a moment for sure. It isn't really a moment that I dreamed of, to be honest with you, because for so long I held on to the sort of actor dream and I went away from stand-up for 10 years and I only came back about 4 years ago, maybe five, and then the pandemic happened. So I'm kind of back. And a big role in comedy that I wasn't expecting, but I'm very, very happy about it. And I'm kind of like, I'm in shock. I'm kind of going, how did this happen? I just don't quite know how this has come about, to be honest. But I'm grabbing it with two hands.
Yeah.
I can tell you that.
And you're back gigging in the Galway Comedy Festival.
That's coming up in the next 2 weeks. Yes. I have a show on Dundalk in the Spirit Store. I'm in Tuam as well, After Darkness, I think it's called, is it, that festival?
Yeah.
So the live gigs are back.
And then you're going on tour with Demented next year.
Yes.
Great
name. That will Demented, because that's what we all are, and that's definitely what I am, being a woman of a certain age and all that.
All right.
Yeah,
and do you deal with that?
Oh, I do. I deal with that in the show. There's no point in not dealing with it.
And is it a personal question, or whereabouts are you on that?
Where are you in your cycle, Deirdre? Is that a personal question?
Well, if you're talking about it on stage in front of, you know, all of these.
Well, I'll tell you what I do talk about. I talk about the fact that people don't even really, there's no real meaning behind a woman of a certain age. Nobody knows. It means different things in different cultures and in different places, right?
Right.
Like in Ireland, for example, it means still rideable, but you might get a child out for that. People might be outraged, but you know, have a laugh at yourself, will you? It doesn't mean that in France, because they're more sophisticated than us, and them being more sexually liberated and all. It means a woman over the age of 40 who can still entice a young man into her bed.
Right.
You know, which is something I've given a lot of thought to, far too much thought now, truth be told. And in the end, I came to the conclusion, I was thinking about that now, do I want a younger man in my life now, do I? I thought, what have I got to say to Harry Styles? What would I say to the man, do you know? Just don't know. We'd be stuck for conversation. I think I'd be looking at him and saying, are you going out in that or what?
Are you going out in those trousers?
Yeah. What about that hair? Would you give that a wash? No, you know?
Yeah. And what are you doing with all those girls in that video? That sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you have it's not the energy. Would you be bothered?
Would you be bothered? Are you going to start telling me about your family? Oh, Jesus. No, I couldn't go through all that again. Are you mad? No. Absolutely not.
He'd be constantly on his phone as well, Deirdre.
On the phone, scrolling away. And you'd be going, come on, we watch a bit of telly. Cup of tea.
And then when it comes to the telly, he'd want to watch Love Island, you'd want to watch Succession. There'd be no agreeing on that.
No.
You have to go to separate rooms.
It's not going to work.
Before you even know it, you're in separate rooms. I'll tell you,
I'm very fascinated by the French president, Emmanuel Macron, right, and his wife, Brigitte. You know, it's 23 years between them.
She's his senior.
She's older
years.
Now. Yes. She's older now. I'm all for it, but she is on my worry list. Now, we were talking about Bridget. See, we were talking about Bridget on the show earlier. Yes. This Bridget, Brigitte Macron.
What do you worry? What do you worry about?
I'll tell you now what I'd be worried about. He's 45 and she's 68. No, she's 58. What's 23? Do the math there.
It'll
for
be
me,
68.
He's 68,
yes,
right.
Yes,
okay,
yes.
So she's 45. He's 45 and she's 68. But that's all right. When he's 55, she'd be 78.
Yeah.
Yeah. When he's 65, she'd be dead, wouldn't she?
Yeah.
Possibly. That's, but
I'd say their friendship or their relationship is based on friendship.
Would you, Ray? I don't think it was based on friendship initially. Now.
No, not initially, but things evolve, don't they? As we know that.
Yeah, I do love their names, though. Do you not think they're the best names? Like, if you had to think up two really, you know, sexy names, you'd probably say to me, Brigitte and Emmanuel.
And Emmanuel,
which
yes,
ironically
yes.
in Irish is what? Bridget Naaman.
What?
Bridget Naaman.
It is Bridget Naaman, yeah.
Bridget Naaman.
Yeah. Was there a Bridget in your class? I'm trying to think. Was
no,
there a Bridget?
I was taught by Sister Bridget, though.
Yeah.
Needless to say.
I don't think there was a Bridget in the convent either. You know, my equivalent, Bridget. Was there a Bridget? No, there wasn't a Bridget.
I think that's gone out of fashion now as a name, is it?
It is. It might come back in.
Probably will. They
but you
do.
Could, like, there was Bridget, and you could spell it B-R-I-G-I-D. These are all things I should have spoke to Colin Manoon about. B-R-I-G-I-D or B-R-I-D-G-E-T. And then there's, you know, Breed is another.
Breed. We love a bit of
Breed. So, demented. So you're going to be talking about that. And what else?
I'll talk
Parenthood,
about.
Parenthood. We'll be talking
oh,
about.
Teenagers. Yeah. Yes. Teenagers. Oh, the lip and the attitude. The trying to deal with it. And the fact that our children are now orange. Our children are orange, aren't they, Ray? Are yours orange?
No, I've been told not to mention that sort of thing on air.
Oh, really? Yes. Oh, there you go. Here's me. But sure, they won't be listening to you. They don't listen to us.
Well,
stop.
You know, that's the day you'd say something, that's the day they'd be listening. And that's the day you get in trouble.
Oh, well, mine are orange.
So, right, okay.
Yeah, and there's a green and white uniform there as well, which is very unfortunate. She goes off to school like a tricolour.
You know,
very handy during the Olympics. I hung her out the
remember
window.
Remember Harry Enfield and what was it? Kathy Bates, was it? Remember they who did?
Harry
no,
Enfield
not Kathy
and
Bates.
Kathy Bates.
No,
yeah.
What's the lady's name? They used to do those teenagers. What's her
well,
name?
Well, don't be asking me, love. I'm a woman of a certain age. My memory's gone. Like, I don't remember names. Like, I literally, names are gone from me entirely. I've started numbering people now. I'd be saying things like, oh, look, there's 52 at 12 o'clock. That's the way my brain has gone.
So the Deirdre O'Kane Show Sunday the 17th of October, which is this Sunday at 10 o'clock on Sky Max.
Oh my god, it's happening, Ray. Yes. I can't believe it. It's actually a thing.
Sinead Gramaka, Deirdre, and we're looking forward to seeing that, and then Demented on tour next year. That's it from us. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Cormac is on his own this evening on Drive Time. Enjoy whatever you're doing, and we will talk to you tomorrow.
Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.